On comics, and I am one of the people who's on it, S.E. Fleenor.
I am the other person who is on it. My name is Sarah Century. You might have heard of me. Who are your favorite pets from comics and pop culture? A tribute to Ace the Wonder Dog. So, Ace the Wonder Dog... That's a good spot to start.
Yes, my doggo Ace recently died and we miss him. He's a very good doggy. He loved the podcast. He loved Sarah and Kate. So he was often present for the podcast and he would like stand outside the door and wait for us. He's a very sweet dog. Mm-hmm. And I miss him very much. And so I was like, I want to do something for him. So I was like, let's talk about our favorite pets from comics. But I also want to honor like, your cats mean everything to you.
I'm obsessed. If you follow me on social media, you understand that my entire world revolves around what my cats are doing in the moments that I am so in their vicinity.
You have the cutest cats. Mm-hmm. I got to meet both of them. They're so different. And Shaka's so small.
Yeah, Shaka is a very tiny cat with a terrible large attitude problem, which is great. And very, very similar to her mother. In some ways. Also, she kind of looks like me a little bit. I don't know. We both have long noses. We have the same expressions because we always are looking at people like, what is wrong with you? That's kind of our natural face of resting what is wrong with you face.
When I picture you and your cats, I picture the picture where you said, never talk to me or my cats again. Or me and my daughters again.
It was Nibs being super cute with her head poking out and my like glaring face behind her.
Oh, Nibs. Nibs is a real special little kitty.
Mm-hmm. Nibs was hurt by people in her life, and then she got taken in by the Dumb Friends League, and she has respiratory issues and things like that, but she is the happiest cat in the world, and she purrs just because you say her name sometimes.
I think I was like, oh, hi, Nibs. Yes. It was so cute.
And you can hear her from three rooms over. She has a very loud purr, and it's very charming.
Very endearing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a little doggo who is Ace's brother, Poe. And Poe is just this, like, weird little shorty who's red and super duper cute. And he, like, loved Ace with his whole heart and soul. And he would stand underneath Ace. And Ace is, like, a big black lab slash German shepherd. Cutest thing in the world. We had a painting done of them. And it totally looks like they're about to, like, drop an album. Like, they're, like, they look really cool. Yeah. Pets are the best. We're so lucky.
Love them. I'm obsessed.
So lucky. So my first one I'm going to start with is like the saddest one.
The saddest.
The saddest, but like has a very sweet ending.
Mm-hmm.
But like is hard to read if you love pets. So it's called We Three, and it is about an arm of the military that does experimentation on some pets to create like drones, essentially, but like operated by pets that they've made semi-sentient so they can make decisions. And basically the three prototypes is Dog, which is one, Cat is two, and Bunny is three. And their names are Bandit, Tinker, and I don't remember the bunny's name.
Cute. Sad
just
bunny.
Just sweet little baby bunny cutie pie. And it's just like this super sad story. But then at the end, like, they get to have a family. The bunny saves the dog and the cat from another experiment that was made very poorly. And so poor thing could not handle continuing to be on this earth. But then Bandit and Tinker find like a person and they become like a little family. It's really sweet. So I always love that one because it's such a sad story and I fucking love sad shit.
Yeah. It's so sad. I, you know, I'm vegan. reading that comic is extremely, extremely hard.
Yeah.
You just will weep. There's no avoiding it. You can't do it.
But it is like a classic story about pets when it comes to comics. Like it's one of the ones people think of every time. But then there's like, you know, Super Cutie Pie Chewy, Captain Marvel's kitty cat slash Flerken.
Who becomes Goose, right?
Yeah, in the film is Goose, also Flerken.
Flerken.
Flerken kitty. So cute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that cat. What a great cat.
Yeah, when they did like a promo for the movie that was just the cat.
Everybody was like, oh.
Everyone's like, mm-hmm. Oh, I'll see
this. I'll be there. I'll see it.
Oh, is that a timer with the kitty playing with it? Mm-hmm. I'll put that on my phone.
That looks like a good movie to see. I think I'll watch it. Jessica Cruz, the Green Lantern in DC, has a lot of cats and a very well-stated affinity for cats. If you watch DC's Superhero Girls, there's ones where she's like holding three cats.
Yes, I love
looking
that.
Frazzled. So couldn't relate to that more. That's pretty strongly relatable for me. Also, Streaky the Super Cat. Streaky is great because Streaky just goes around thinking mean thoughts about everybody because mm-hmm. cats are evil, like women or whatever. The trope that women are like cats.
I love it.
Streaky always has mean things to think and do. And Supergirl just is constantly, what are you doing, Streaky?
I love it.
I love Streaky.
I love Lion Cat from Saga. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much the only thing I like about Saga is Lion Cat. Lion Cat, when you lie, says lying.
Mm-hmm.
And just constantly is like calling people out. People are like trying to save their lives by like telling a little fib. And Lion Cat's like lying. I love it.
Yeah.
And it's also a very, very big cat.
Yeah.
Love Lion Cat.
Yeah. And then that scene that is so heartbreaking where the person is, I did like a bad job or something, and Lion Cat goes lying, and it's just like, oh no, oh no,
oh Lion Cat,
Lion Cat, I love you.
Oh, I don't think I got that far. That's adorable.
It was so brutal. I died. It's one that people share all of the time.
I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that. In Transmetropolitan,
right?
There's the cat that has like the three faces.
Yes,
he adopts the kitty, and then like the kitty's just like around being like a cat, super cute. Like love a little mutated kitty, kitty of the future,
who has a bad attitude. It's like, you know, Transmetropolitan is about him being kind of a jerk, and the cat is also the same.
Exactly, echoes the themes of the comic. Yeah, for sure.
Pets do resemble their owners.
Isn't that curious? I absolutely adore Old Lace from Runaways,
mm-hmm.
both in the comics and in the TV adaptation. I love the adaptations, Old Lace.
Yes.
Like, I was glad it like got adapted when CG was really good because it's really believable in the relationship with Arsenic. Very cute. They have that like psychic connection. And so I love Old Lace. I love the idea of like a dinosaur being alive today. That's pretty cool stuff.
What about Kiki's delivery service? Is it Gigi the cat with the bonkers eyes? Do y'all know that one?
Yeah, but no.
I love that cat. That cat is so great.
I can't leave off Lockheed, Kitty's dragon, who's like kind of a pet and then also kind of like a normal being that just like communicates differently.
Yep.
Which makes me love Lockheed even more.
Lockheed is really fun.
So cute. So
always
fun.
And
so,
like, it's so perfect because Kitty Pryde would have a dragon that is obsessed with her because we're all obsessed with her.
Exactly.
Everybody is obsessed with Kitty Pryde in every comic that she's in. So
as well, they and we should be. Data's cat Spot.
Spot.
Spot is so cute.
What a relief the end of Generations is whenever Spot comes crawling out of the wall and Data's like, Spot, you made it. And they just embrace.
It's like just the gentlest little
meow. Spot survived.
For horses, I love Swiftwind
mm-hmm.
and like Shadowfax.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Gandalf's horse. Those two are super duper cool. Swiftwind is funny in the reboot because Swiftwind is like a labor organizer for horses, which is the greatest concept I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And I adore it.
Yeah. Also Danny Moonstar's horse, Brightwind.
Right, of course.
And Aragorn, which is the Valkyrie's horse that she got from the Black Knight because the Black Knight got turned to stone. And she was kind of like, so is anybody going to take care of this horse that's like has wings?
No. I got it.
All right, I'll take care. And then whenever Black Knight gets out, he's like, what happened to that horse? And she goes, oh, yeah, I guess so. So here. But then by then, Horsey had chosen a new owner. So Black Knight missed out. He had to go get a different horse with wings.
I love Nibbler from Futurama.
Oh,
who is
yep.
like this very intelligent being who, because he was left on the planet that was collapsing, his cuteness instinct kicked in and he just acted like a little baby cutie pie. And so then he wears a diaper and like eats canned food and talks like me, 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 me. and it's adorable. And it's also like a very intelligent being who are still like adorable, but they eat so much. I love that Nibbler must have like a pocket dimension inside because like eats elephant size animals in like one bite.
Yeah.
It is hysterical.
It is.
And then, of course, I have to shout out Robin Hobb's The Realm of the Elderling Saga. Night Eyes, who's not a pet, but is like a wolf brother to Fitz Chivalry. And it's just like the coolest representation of this wolf who's like, ah, human, you think you're so smart. You poor thing. Let me help you. Let me help you with your problems. And it's so, so sweet. I totally, totally love it. And then, of course, Lion from Steven Universe, who literally contains a pocket dimension. This is like a running theme. The Flurkin contains a pocket dimension. Nibbler must. Lion does. Interesting.
I love Crypto, the wonder dog, super dog. So Crypto is the best. And in Grant Morrison's New 52 Action Comics run, there's a story that's Christmas time. And Clark, who's lost Crypto, Crypto's been gone for a really long time. So he goes into the Phantom Zone and finds Crypto. Oh my God, the tears. That is another story where you just will die whenever you read it.
That's adorable.
It's just like a boy and his dog. And it's like, no, he's Superboy and his dog. Crypto.
Crypto. I am definitely putting this issue on the reading list for this month.
It's so good. You'll cry. But it's such a tender, the dog does everything for the owner. Like the dog sticks it out and waits for Clark to come back.
Oh, I love that.
Crypto. I love that.
There's also this kind of random dog, which is Midnight from the Tick TV show.
Oh, yeah.
And what I love about Midnight is like a super dog, kind of making fun of Crypto and all that. And is like not with, I can't remember what they're called, the like Freedom Five maybe. They get killed by a super villain and Midnight's not there. Midnight is like a black German shepherd and looks a lot like my dog Ace looked like. And we used to like say that Ace was kind of a philosopher and like a nihilist, like a bit of a French existentialist, definitely pansexual, like not into most people, but was like pretty deep. And Midnight ends up becoming a self-help atheist and says there is no God, there is only dog, and then like does a book tour, and it's just like incredible, and it's so, so funny and sweet. And whenever I see it, or like I you know, sometimes I'll just watch the clips of that from the Tick because it reminds me so much of my doggo, and also is just like a philosophizing dog is what I want most in the world. You know, it is so fucking cute.
It's so cute. I want to give a shout out to friend of the podcast Tana Thornock's cat, Mr. Spaghetti Cat, who made us all smile earlier today. Shout out, Mr. Spaghetti Cat.
We love you, Mr. Spaghetti Cat. You're the realest.
Oh, Kate, what is the tortie that you live with?
The squirrel.
The squirrel. Shout out to Kate's cat, the squirrel. Shannon / Kate's cat. Shout out to friend of the podcast.
Clickbait the Kid. What a name.
Yeah, the person who did the music for the podcast, Gato, or Katie Taylor, has a cat living in her house named Clickbait the Kitten, who is her roommate's cat. Gato has Bill the dog, Bill Murray the dog.
Bill Murray the dog.
Mm-hmm. Bill Murray.
This one's for you, Bill Murray.
Everybody loves Bill Murray. I lived with Bill for a while and I love Bill. He's a really good dog. He was so obsessed with the cats that we lived with that it was just so uncomfortable. We would walk around and it would just, dude, you need to like stop staring at those cats. It's been 7 days. Like, you gotta stop. Anyway, he's really cute. Oh, they're also cute.
I love dogs.
Pets.
Pets are the best.
Tell us about your pets, people on the internet.
Comic of the week is Constantine the Hellblazer, written by James Tynion IV and Ming Doyle, art by Riley Rossmo, colors by Ivan Plasencia. Letters by Tom Napolitano. So this is probably my first favorite comic as someone who'd read comics. Like, like I had, when I had read enough comics to, like, be someone who'd read comics. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, there's a point where you're like, every comic is my favorite because I've never read comics before. This is incredible. Look at Batman. Look at Superman. Oh, my God. You know? And then it's like, oh, okay, now I've read 60, 70 comics. Like,
now maybe I know discerning.
What, yeah, like, maybe I have, like, a little bit of understanding of, like, what's happening in this genre. I love the art in this one. It's probably the coolest Constantine.
I love the art. I think that the art totally changes the tone of Constantine. This book, to me, I think for a really long time, Hellblazer lost what was fun about John Constantine.
Oh,
we had a lot of really dark and terrifying stories with him that are really good through the entire original run of Hellblazer. I would not ever disparage those stories because they're really fun to read. Vertigo as an entity, I think, just turned out some of, you know, the weirdest comics that most of us
love. A lot
read.
Of the old Constantine. It's, again, it's like the, it's the reason I love horror. You know, horror has this capacity to push us in our minds to a different kind of place. Where, like, we're kind of afraid, we're curious, we're titillated, right? Like, we read horror because we're gross.
Yeah.
Like, we're just gross beings. And so I really like some of that early stuff. And, like, some of the early stuff, even when they started to first establish canonically that Constantine's bisexual.
Yeah.
Like, some of that stuff is, like, fucked up.
Yeah.
And amazing at the same time. Like, where you're like, this is not right. And holy shit, that's so fascinating.
Yeah, and I think that what was so interesting about this one was that it kind of got him back to ground zero, and it allowed him to be all of that fucked up part.
Yes.
Like, he got to be just as terrible as we know him to be, but also we got to see him be fun and to flirt with people and to actually have a good time, which I think he was really overdue for. It had been like a little while. From what I remember chronologically, like, I don't quite remember where I read this. I know that it was certainly after I had kind of taken a break from Constantine for a while. His series ended. We had a slew of really depressing stories, you know. Well, I just don't remember exactly where I had read this, but I do remember it just feeling kind of like a breath of fresh air, because we get to see a new style of Constantine. We get to see him, as I say, just being a complete screw up, but also doing it in that way that we can sympathize with. Because there's no bones about it, right? Even from the very beginning, they're just like, this guy's like bad. He's terrible at everything.
Yes.
All of his friends suffer from being anywhere in proximity to him.
He's literally haunted by hundreds of ghosts because he has cost that many people their lives at some point in his career in the dark arts.
And those are his friends. Like, that's
close
the only
friends.
People that he ever actually interacts with on a personal level. And they all have great reasons to despise him.
Yeah.
And, you know, his friend, what was it, Gary, who was with him forever and who just got completely screwed in this story. It's just another person who has these terrible consequences for interacting with John Constantine. But here he is, ready for love again.
Yeah. Well, and I think you totally nailed it. It's in tone, in literal colors. Everything was so dark with Constantine. And again, a lot of it's fantastic and exciting and interesting. But this is so tonally different.
Yeah.
And it still goes to dark places. But the coloring is bright. And even when you go to hell, hell looks like something, you know. It's like it has dimension to it, and there are people who are, you know, there are always people in hell because that's hell, but, you know, they're come to life in a different way in this run. I really, really love the art. You know, Constantine's all long and lanky, but everybody's kind of like long, again, like distorting our perception, which I think a lot of Constantine is about that, where it's like, you know, about the dark arts and hell and heaven and good and bad, and also I'm like a limitless being. It's like, what does that mean? Like, what, how can you be limitless, Constantine? Like, you're just some jackass. Like,
and he really is. Yeah. There's no part of this story where you really forget that he's a complete jackass.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He doesn't forget it. He's very aware of it. And I really enjoyed, what was it? He had to come face to face with his terrible choices with Victoria. Victoria was one of his exes who he had just cast off, essentially.
He basically got her hooked on the dark arts and then, like,
left
like,
her.
Like, pushed her aside and was like, I got shit to do. A parade of exes, and it's like not great.
And Georgina, who had a lot of subtext, I think, with Victoria, I couldn't quite tell what their relationship was.
Oh, but I always, in my mind, they were definitely together for a while.
Yeah, and that, like, she had kind of like went off with John for a while, and then Georgina couldn't be there for her after that because she couldn't pick up the pieces of John's terrible decisions and the effects that it had on Victoria.
Totally.
So her and John have to team up to take care of this situation, help Victoria, because now she's just become a complete, you know, undead demon monster.
Yeah, like something they've never seen before.
Yeah.
I think what's cool about that is you see this a lot when, like, Constantine comes into contact with Sandman, or Constantine comes into contact with, like, Swamp Thing. Like, a lot about, like, the psychic capacity for trauma.
Yeah.
And, like, how some people glob onto the darkness in a way that's different than other people.
Yeah, I think that that's true. I also think that something that's always really interesting about Constantine is that by his own terribleness, he also shows you what's terrible about you.
Oh,
and
yes.
And that's something that he always does to people. People will be like, yeah, you're a complete ass. And he's like, I am, but check this out. You left her too. And like, that's what he does with Georgina. And Georgina has every reason to be completely disgusted with this guy.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting whenever they team up. And then also he still betrays Georgina and still ends the situation really badly. She says, I'll never forgive you. And he says, neither will I. And that's like their establishment. Yeah, we'll see you later. And yeah. To me, that's something that's interesting because as much as all of these characters, you know, his interactions with Alec too, or Swamp Thing, is always just him being kind of like, yeah, dude, well, you're a god and like you should have known better. And just because I can come in here and completely throw you off, like I shouldn't be able to do that. So it's always
interesting. They're like my favorite frenemies, I feel like.
Oh, yeah, they're really interesting. Yeah. It's such a weird matchup and such a good one. But yeah, it's always so interesting to watch the way that he has a tendency of like really bringing people down in a way.
Oh God, yeah. Literally and figuratively.
That should be, the name of the story is Going Down, right? So, but he also does it in this way that makes them have to accept things that they don't love about themselves.
I feel like he has no pretenses about who he is.
Yeah.
Like John Constantine is kind of a piece of shit.
Yeah.
And is aware of the fact that he's kind of a piece of shit.
Yeah. And he openly lies to his friends. Again. Absolutely. And again throughout this arc, even just this like 5-6 issue arc, he like betrays people for absolutely no reason.
Like, well, and you know, what I like about him as a character is I feel like people really get that he has a code.
Mm-hmm.
And his code is just very different.
Yeah,
his code is like stop the darkness at all costs.
Yeah.
And that can be children, that can be lovers, that could be demons he's double crossing, it could be himself, like he sends himself to hell.
Yeah.
Bunches of times.
A bunch of people
know John Constantine in hell.
Yeah.
Know? Like, A, because he's been there a lot, and B, because he's exorcised a bunch of them or killed them. And so, you know, he sends himself into that war zone. And it can be really disconcerting. Like, wow, like, what a piece of shit. And it's like, well, God, but he's so consistent.
Yeah. And you meet those characters sometimes. Zatanna doesn't show up in this, or there's a cameo of Zatanna, but that's it. But what's always so funny about her and Constantine is that she's not a bad person at all.
No.
And so whenever he tries to force her face to face with her demon, she's like, I'm good, dude.
She's like, I don't understand how you have such a dark relationship with magic. Like, I'm doing fine.
Like, check out my cool card trick. I like learned a new card trick.
And he's like, God damn it.
You're like the one who got everything good out of this, and I'm the one who got everything terrible out of it.
Well, I think that is another piece of it, right? Like, mm-hmm. Constantine's also a survivor of abuse. Like,
yeah.
He was highly abused as a child. He grew up in an incredibly homophobic time that shows up a lot throughout the comics,
where people were
getting beat up in bathrooms.
And he's getting beat up. Mm-hmm. He's straight passing, I guess,
yeah.
But he also is one of those people where if you look at his thin dude, kind of pretty boy, like et cetera, et cetera, a lot of people back in the 70s certainly would have just kicked his ass for being, you
and
know,
did,
a
right?
pretty
like you're,
punk.
You're
you know?
Absolutely right. And I think that what's great about this comic is that backstory is all there.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes up in these ways that if you've read all that, you're like, oh my gosh, wow. Like, do Tinian and Doyle get Constantine? Yes, they do.
They sure do.
They get him. And, you know, he gets to have a boyfriend, which is very exciting.
That's what I was going to say. I love Oliver.
Oh,
so
my God.
Much.
He owns a restaurant,
uh-huh.
And he's, like, gorgeous.
I know. I showed my brother a picture of him because I was telling – my brother's a big John Constantine fan, and I was telling him about this story this morning and just being like, this was really good. You know, we have similar likes for this character, so – I was excited to tell him about it. And then I was like, now look at his boyfriend, Oliver. And Preston was just like, that's a bear. Like,
yes, he is.
He's a daddy. And I'm just like, yeah, Preston, how did you know that? I was just like, he's so cute. And Preston's just like, he is.
I mean, yeah. And they're like a really sweet couple.
They are. And,
you know, you kind of, there's this moment where you're like, Constantine,
you found you did love. Something
right. Like, this is great. And Constantine's like, you can't, you know, this is like Constantine's refrain whenever he's like romantic with someone. Like, you can't love me. The darkness is my only love. Like, I will hurt you.
And Oliver's just like smiling at him.
He's like, you're so cute. It's you get so all worked up.
Yeah, I know. Oh my God. And that's just, he has the biggest arms to just cradle. Oh my God.
Yeah. Which is like what Constantine needs.
It's
yeah.
exactly what Constantine needs. I wish that, well, we're only talking about the one story yes. arc. I will say I wish that that relationship in general had been able to last longer than yes. it did.
Yes. I mean, the relationship kind of ends when the run ends.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's unfortunately short-lived. I think there could have been more cool stuff to be done there.
Yeah.
But one thing that's been cool is I think that Legends of Tomorrow, which now has written Constantine out of the cast, has done a good job with nods, especially in this run.
Yeah.
And in general, I think despite what I sometimes am like, Matt Ryan is a great John Constantine.
Yeah.
He just nails it.
He does.
And John's voice more than anything, mm-hmm. which is like half of who he is. Like when you read a John Constantine comic, you're like, oh, this is a bloke being a dick.
Yeah.
And I get it. I really like the adaptation in Legends. I think it's super fun.
They needed like a bisexual flirt to take Sarah's place while yes. Sarah's like coupled up. Sarah can't flirt with everybody through time anymore, so they like had to bring in John Constantine to do it. And I think it's then
Charlie's
beautiful.
Like also doing her part,
just
you know,
in there, just catching, picking up the slack.
so fun.
Yeah, I loved this story, and I think it just put Constantine back on the right track pretty much.
Yeah. I also, again, going back to the art, I think that this was, again, a piece that the art was distinct. It was one yeah. of the first ones I love where the art was so, like, you know it's the Tinian Doyle run.
And it's not, like, the previous art we've seen on this book at all.
You wouldn't associate this with superhero illustrations.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I think gives it a really distinct flavor.
The monsters are really good. Oh, the demons so are really cool. good.
The coloring on them is all really, really, really incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And I love the way the panels are used because yeah. they're not used the typical way we think of them. And one thing I am always going to be telling people about is like the reason comics are so incredible is how we have learned to like make variations on this theme.
Yeah.
We say, okay, yes, this is how panels work. Here's, we create a literacy. Like, here's how you know what comment bubble to read next. And this is one where it's like, okay, yes. Okay, and twist. I'm going to twist everything that you know about how to read this. And one thing I noticed is while this is available on DC Universe, in the way it tracks panels, mm-hmm. it confused it. So yeah. it was like mixing up the panels and sort of giving them into you in reverse order. So I think if you can get your hands on a physical copy.
I was going to say that too. Not only for that reason, not because it puts things out of order, but because the double page spreads in this
so
book are gorgeous. And they don't translate very well no. to computer. Because I just got finished reading this morning. Like, I had read this book before in a trade paperback, and then I read it again this morning, and I read it on my phone, and it just doesn't capture. There's so many comics you can read on your phone, and it's awesome. The convenience level is awesome, but sometimes there's books where you just really need to grab the trade paperback, and I'd say that this is one of them.
And I think it's just such a nice, you can probably get it from your library, I think that's where I've read it from, but it's just such a lovely experience of a comic book, especially for a very mainstream character.
Yeah. What's up, friends that I talk to frequently? How are you? Have you ever considered getting a Patreon? A Patreon to support Bitches on Comics? Other things?
Support us on patreon.com/bitchesoncomics. You have to type it out. You can't search it on Patreon. Again, it's patreon.com/bitchesoncomics.
We have many levels of support. You can get extra episodes.
You can get episodes that focus on new media like TV and film. You can get episodes that focus on providing these intoxicated comics, background histories on your favorite heroes, on Captain Marvel, Deadpool, you name it. We're going to be exploring our favorite heroes just for our patrons.
So many also extra extended episodes with so many new reviews of so many comics.
If you join us at the $2 level, you every week will get a review for a new comic that is coming out in the last year. So we're talking about things that you can find and read right now. super fun. For the $5 level and higher, we provide reading lists. So we do, based on the month's conversations, what are the comics we recommend reading? And that's super fun because we tell you where to find it. We tell you exactly what issue number to look for. We tell you how you can find it in a collected volume. We tell you who wrote it. We name the letterers. We are here for this art craft. And we give you a personalized reading list. So you get to become a part of the Bitches on Comics. We have Invasion from Planet WrestleTopia, written by Ed Kunal and Matt Enten, art by David Schade, colors by Marissa Louise.
Yeah, this was a pretty fun comic. This totally reminds me of watching wrestling in
as a kid, right?
80s, like the late 80s, pretty much. This, the whole vibe of it is 100% that.
Everyone talks like wrestlers.
Yes, they super
but
do.
Like in normal situations. Well, I mean, I don't know how normal it is to be invaded from Planet WrestleTopia.
Right, that is an abnormal situation usually.
Okay, so they speak like they're wrestlers all of the time. That's mm-hmm. just the way they speak.
Yeah.
It's pretty entertaining. The sort of premise is that there's this guy who is wrestling and he's supposed to get to win the belt, but then his boss decides, no, you don't get the belt. So then he declares himself the greatest wrestler in the galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, dun, 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 there's another person who is actually the greatest wrestler in the galaxy because he's the head of Planet WrestleTopia.
Yeah. Yeah, I would just recommend this to anybody who is that era of wrestling fan because I know wrestling's changed a little bit, maybe not so much, but definitely any person who was watching the late 80s matches, I think, would find a home with this one.
Absolutely. I think it's definitely not something either you or I would probably seek out. And so we're super glad that the creators reached out to us and shared a copy. Mm-hmm. So again, if you're into like wrestling, you want to laugh at white dudes being ridiculous, then I would highly recommend picking it up.
And the art's really good too.
Yeah, the art's lovely. A podcast that is all about making comic books more accessible to LGBTQ folks and women. So if you have a question about anything related to comics, comic adaptations, pop culture in general, conventions, cosplay, you name it, that's what we're here for. You can send us your questions at bitchesoncomics@gmail.com. Unfortunately, Gmail does not like the word bitch. They're pretty judgy about it. So we can't have it spelled out. It is bitchesoncomics@gmail.com. And do you remember, there's no I'm bitch.
If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by rating and reviewing us on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm Sarah Century, and you can find me at www.sarahcentury.com and Twitter and Instagram. Still Sarah Century on those.
I'm Essie Fleenor. You can learn more about me at essiefleenor.com. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @SE_Fleenor.
Bitches on Comics is recorded by Kate Warner, who plays in the band Church Fire. You can find them at churchfiremusic.com. Our music is recorded by Katie Taylor, who plays as Earth Control Pill. You can find her music at earthcontrolpill.bandcamp.com.
Bitches on Comics is recorded in Denver, Colorado. We want to recognize the indigenous peoples who have inhabited and do inhabit this land. The Arapaho Nation, the Ute Nation, the Cheyenne Nation, and others who have been erased from our history and collective memories through colonization.